Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the responsibility of a parent to help an overweight or obese child trim down? And what sort of challenges, heartaches, and triumphs might result from the effort? When Dara Lynn Weiss wrote an essay last year about her once obese 7-year-old daughter's hard-fought battle to achieve a healthy weight, she did so with pride in little B's determination and relief that the girl's blood pressure had returned to normal levels. Weiss was candid in the piece about some of her own parenting missteps along the path to success and about her own history of somewhat disordered eating. But she was completely unprepared for the article, which appeared in the image-obsessed Vogue magazine's April 2012 issue, to spark an immediate and furious backlash from readers who accused Weiss of caring more about her daughter's appearance than her self-esteem. Dara Lynn Weiss is a freelance writer and television, print, and internet content producer. She shares her family's story in her new memoir, The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. Dara Lynn, welcome to Think.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
The thing that seems to have come up over and over for you and your family is that parents of significantly overweight children are trapped in this sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't conundrum. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I felt very much, well, first of all, that I had made presumptions and assumptions about parents and children who had families struggling with obesity that caused me to criticize and judge the parents who, you know, quote-unquote, let their children become obese. Of course, we look at the parents and we say, what are you feeding them? Why aren't you getting them more exercise? And it's very easy to criticize and judge. And at the same time, when I was in that position and I made moves to rectify the situation, to address my child's obesity, I felt very much in the same way, judged and criticized for making those decisions as well.
So you have two children. You have Bea, who's 9 now, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
And her brother David, who's a year younger. And from the beginning, they had not just different bodies, but just really different appetites for food.
Yes, which was another reason I was sort of surprised to find myself in the position of being a parent of an obese child. I felt that I was doing all the things that parents are told to do in terms of nutrition and activity and focusing on my children's health. And indeed, I raised two children in the same home with the same parents and the same food, and one was able to maintain a healthy weight with zero effort, and the other became obese. And I felt that there was just something that B was born with that was a predisposition toward obesity, an appetite, a preference for certain foods, a failure to self-regulate, that really wasn't about so much lifestyle or the things she was exposed to, but more just a need to regulate her eating and to set limits, which is a challenging undertaking with a child.
So after her 6-year checkup, before the doctor really said, okay, it's time to sort of take control here, you said, okay, well, I'm going to help her get her weight under control. But you, even though you had healthful foods around the house, you write that you just really struggled to know exactly what she should be eating and how much. And I think it's something that a lot of people just take for granted because they don't have a child with a problem. Talk about that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that I had never thought about how many calories my child was eating, how many should she eat? And to this day, my son, I don't keep track of it because he eats until he's not hungry anymore, and then he stops, and then his weight is in healthy range. So why would I think about it or care? You know, there was focus on not eating junk food and on eating healthy food, but quantity was not something that I felt I needed to focus on until it became sort of my daughter's downfall. And then, you know, I looked very hard at her diet, and I thought, you know, she's not eating bad food. You know, she eats what other kids eat, and there are sometimes treats involved and occasionally junk food. But really, that was not her issue. It was a question of how much is enough. Is one slice of pizza appropriate for a 6-year-old, or is 2 slices okay? And that I really didn't have an answer to that question. And given that I had struggled with my own appetites and relationship to food, I felt very uncomfortable making that call. You know, should I tell her she can't have a second slice of pizza, or if she tells me she's hungry, should I give her a second slice? I really didn't know how to respond in situations like that, which is why we sought the help of a nutritionist, a pediatric nutritionist who specialized in childhood obesity, who gave us this structure that was a very clear delineation of what was an appropriate amount for our daughter to eat, and that was extremely helpful because I really didn't have that information and didn't feel qualified to make that determination on my own.
I thought it was interesting that when you first visited the nutritionist, you didn't posit it as, okay, B, you're going on a diet. You said the whole family's going to go and sort of learn some better ways to eat. Your brother needs to eat more than pasta, and Dad and I need to make better choices. But in some ways, she got that, and in other ways, she sort of wasn't buying it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think she understood that her weight was not at a healthy point, and I think she was self-conscious about it from a social perspective, and also knew that it was something that, you know, the doctor had kind of talked to us about a little bit year after year at her appointments. And I think as much as I do believe that everyone needs to be responsible for his or her own nutrition, regardless of whether they're at a healthy weight, that somehow the decision to go at that moment, she understood that the sort of most dire need for a nutritional revamp was on her. And, I told her as much as possible that throughout this process, that being overweight is not the reason that someone needs to pay attention to their diet. Everyone has to. And that we all need to focus on this, whether we're a healthy weight or not. But I think she did feel that there was some special need in her case to get this under control.
How had you become aware that she, in fact, did notice that she was heavier than a lot of her friends and wasn't necessarily happy about that?
She would say it. You know, at age six, it's shocking and upsetting, but she would say, "Mommy, I'm fat. I have a big belly." She would sort of look at herself in the mirror and kind of suck in her stomach to try to make it look flat, and it was heartbreaking. And she would come home sometimes and say, so-and-so said, "B, you're fat," or, you know, that they did some experiment in science class that involved them all getting on a scale with a melon and that her weight was much higher than everyone else's. And she was aware of it at an age that seemed extremely young, but I think that is, unfortunately, a trend that kids as young as 6, 7, 8 years old are kind of aware of their bodies as, you know, fitting into this sort of social ideal or not. So it was something that I think was already causing her some distress, unfortunately.
So her 7-year checkup was a real wake-up call for you, not simply because she had put on a significant amount of weight in the past year, but her blood pressure had risen.
Yes. I mean, there was such an issue for me about, you know, not wanting to make weight an issue if it didn't need to be. And the idea that people can be heavy and still be healthy, that just because someone is overweight does not necessarily mean, well, we need to intervene and change this, we need to fix this. There's a spectrum of health, and that heavy people can be on it, and that I didn't want to overreact to her situation. But seeing that she had high blood pressure at age 7 was just, to me, this no longer was a question of, well, this could be a threat to her health. I felt like this is a threat to her health. She's her weight is in the obese category. Her blood pressure is up. She is suffering, you know, the kind of self-esteem issues and social discomfort that is associated with overweight children and obese children. And this is not something that's a threat anymore. This is a reality.
Talk about this, if you would, Darilyn. Throughout the book, you refer to obesity itself as a disease, which I know is sort of debated in the medical community. As you mentioned, some overweight people can be healthy. Mm-hmm. People say obesity is a risk factor for disease. Was it helpful to you somehow to see the obesity itself as the disease?
I found that very useful. It was something that I kind of came across in reading about it, the identification of it as a disease. And it made sense to me in that way that, you know, people talk about alcoholism or drug addiction as a disease, and I try to be very careful when I make that comparison. But the idea that two different people can consume alcohol and have very different responses to it, and one person can control that and another person can't, and that's certainly nothing that someone would choose or develop. That's just something people may be born with, and an ability to manage alcohol or to manage food. And that I felt very much just from observing her behavior that B was born with a different way of approaching food that was not healthy and was conducive to obesity, and that needed to be managed, and that it wasn't a simple question of, well, she's eating junk food and she's not active enough, that there was really something genetic, some predisposition that was at play that needed management as much as any other medical issue might.
So I thought this was really interesting. Your friends meant well, but you felt like they didn't have kids who struggled with their weight, and therefore they simply couldn't understand the importance for you of sticking very closely to this plan that was prescribed.
Yes, and one of the main reasons I wanted to write about this issue was that I felt that there were so many instances in which I felt like a crazy person. I felt people were looking at me like, you are crazy, and you are, they could not understand why I would be upset that they offered my child a salad after my daughter had had dinner. And I understand why that seems crazy. I understand why it seems crazy that I would stop my daughter in the middle of drinking a hot chocolate once I found out how many calories were in it and that I had misjudged it and that she could no longer drink it in my eyes. And people thought, that's crazy. Why wouldn't you just let her finish it? And there were so many moments like that that I had made this decision that we are going to do this and we are going to stick to this program and we are not going to let these moments slip by because they happen all the time. And I wish it were so much less awkward to kind of make these decisions and make these set these limits. But it is so hard and it is so awkward. And that, everyone, all my friends and family mean well, and of course they wanted what was best for Bea, but people couldn't understand why that salad, that hot chocolate made a difference. And I, who was so mired in the minutiae of this program, saw very clearly how it made a difference to me and to her and day to day. And so that's a bit what I wanted to write about in the article I wrote and in the book, The Heavy, what was behind those moments, what was behind those decisions, and how uncomfortable it is to do something that people really don't understand. They see the action, they don't understand the backstory, and it is awkward.
It's funny, my children do not struggle with their weight, but I still find that school with its nonstop cookie and cupcake and candy parade is like completely undermines any parent's effort to have their kids eat a healthy diet or, you know, God forbid, be the one that is allowed to give them a cookie once a day. If they've already had one at school, they can't have one at home.
Yeah, I think it's something that's very, you know, individual to each family has their own issues for their children and their own dietary restrictions. And school, you know, kind of is a one-size-fits-all proposition. There's one lunch that they're all served unless they bring their own, and there's, you know, things dispensed to each child equally. And it does fall to the individual parent to decide, you know, this is something my child can participate in or can't participate in or can, but only to a limited extent. And it's a tough environment. But I did feel very early on that there are so many environments that are problematic for children struggling with their weight. School is one of them, but any restaurant is problematic. Any birthday party is problematic. Any visit to grandma's house can be problematic. And that I wasn't going to try to change the system. I wasn't going to try to change school and birthday parties and movie theaters. I was just going to do what was important for my child and make her understand what her limits were and help her maintain them.
Dara Lynn Weiss is my guest. She's a freelance writer and television, print, and internet content producer. Her new book is called The Heavy, A Mother, a Daughter, and a Diet. We'll return to our discussion of the book after this break. If you'd like to join us, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Darrilynn Weiss. She's a freelance writer and television, print, and internet content producer. Her new memoir is called The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Darrilynn, one thing that is interesting is, you know, you published this article. I don't know how long the original piece was, 1,000 words or whatever. And instantly people feel like they know everything about you. Do not hesitate to sort of judge you and just say some really terrible things about your motivations. How did you file it and think, I wonder if people might misread this, or did it really just slap you in the face?
Certainly the latter. I think I knew this was a surprisingly controversial topic, and that's why I thought it was so interesting to write about, because we imagine, you know, childhood obesity, we all agree this is a problem that needs addressing, and we imagine that everyone will kind of be encouraging and supportive of an effort to reverse a child's obesity. So I was surprised in my day-to-day life that there was so much kind of opposition, which I thought people would sort of find interesting to discuss, but it did certainly strike a nerve much greater than anything I had predicted, and there were incredibly vicious attacks against me personally from all over the world, and I felt completely shocked and horrified and confused, because I, you know, one can say, well, the press distorts things, but this was an article I had written that were in my it was in my words, it was my story, and I felt that a lot of it was misinterpreted, but that, you know, that was part of what I had to go through as a parent in this situation, so many people disapproving of my choices.
Did you feel at all like it might be a class issue? Because I think about the overwhelming support for, say, the First Lady's campaign against childhood obesity, and people seem to think this is great. And yet, maybe because you are not overweight yourself, was that an issue? I mean, are you able to figure out why it was such, the criticism of you in particular as a sort of activist parent was so strong?
I think there were many factors. I think the fact that the article appeared in a fashion magazine versus a parenting magazine was certainly affected its reception. I think my honesty about my own issues and concerns about my weight as I've gone through my life caused people to think that my motivations were questionable. I think, in particular, there's this idea that that this is a harder topic than people want to understand. I think I have so much respect for what Michelle Obama is doing with regards to childhood obesity, but she takes a very gentle hand, and it's really about awareness and nutrition and thoughtful eating, and it's not nearly as severe a prescription as what I decided was necessary for my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I think people kind of look at the conventional wisdom of these sort of subtle lifestyle changes and think, Why isn't this woman just doing that? You know, why is this woman putting her child on a diet and cutting calories and being obsessive? And that's hard to hear, that sometimes that something that severe can be necessary to fight obesity.
Yeah, I suppose some of those tactics suggested by the First Lady are particularly effective in maybe preventing obesity, yeah, as compared with coping with it once it has set in. And you found, in fact, that you needed to help Bea follow the diet the nutritionist prescribed pretty much to the letter in order to have results.
That was my feeling. I think anyone who's been on a diet knows that it's only effective if you stick to it, and it's only effective if you stay on it, and that in terms of not reaching a point where you say, oh, now I'm at the weight I want, and I'll go back to eating how I used to. For us, we very much define diet in the old-fashioned definition of this is a habitual daily way of eating, and that needed to change, and that if we were willing to kind of slip up and cut ourselves slack, that we weren't going to get healthy. It was a very, you know, I think the diet has been characterized as draconian and severe and, you know, the very low calorie. It really wasn't. It was a very, you know, it was obviously prescribed by a doctor, and it was really an appropriate amount of food, and it felt like a severe cutting of calories only because Bea was so accustomed to overeating, I think. And so the idea that we would stick very ardently to a diet that was prescribing an appropriate amount of food, that made sense to me, that we wouldn't allow ourselves to overeat. So indeed, I think people were shocked and upset by the level of stringency that I brought to it.
You know, one of the other things that I guess you were up against is the fact that food has gotten so big in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And you write about the fact that, you would give her a mini bagel instead of a regular bagel, which is about this, three times the size of the bagels you and I ate as kids. Mm-hmm. And issues like that many of us haven't realized that we are eating more than people once did.
Yes, I think that's very interesting. The idea, as a grown woman, I'm still, on the small side of the spectrum of human beings. My husband is twice my size. And when we go to a restaurant, if we order the same thing, we're going to get identical plates of food. And it falls to the individual to say, is this amount appropriate for me? And if you're, in the business of running a restaurant, you don't want half of your customers to go hungry, so you're going to serve as much as your biggest customer might need. And that leaves a lot of other customers with the responsibility of controlling their own portions. And I think that happens for everybody all the time, and it becomes more automatic as we are adults. But for children to make the determination that even though they've gotten a giant bag of popcorn at the movie, that that's not what they should be eating, it's hard for them to make that decision because they sort of eat what they're given. And I think that some children are able to regulate. My son gets a full-size bagel because he'll eat half of it, or he'll eat three-quarters of it, or he'll eat the whole thing, depending on whether he's hungry. And mm-hmm. And whereas my daughter and I will always eat the whole bagel every time. And if you're that kind of person, it's important to only allow yourself to have as your portion the appropriate amount, and that does take a lot of work these days.
Dara Lynn Weiss is here. We're talking about her new memoir, The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. Talk about that issue, because it seems like something most parents could relate to, that you were you knew that you could trust your son to sort of regulate his own eating. B needed more help in learning what appropriate portions were. And so there were times when she got mad that the rules were different.
Absolutely, and I think that was very hard for her, and I give her a ton of credit for being honest about her feelings of the unfairness, but also not sabotaging the effort. We would sit down at dinner, and her brother would have way more food on his plate. He would get a full-size bagel in the morning, and she would only get a mini bagel. And of course, at age 7, at age 8, she's going to complain and say, why does he get the big bagel? Why does he get, the bigger portion of pasta? And, it is unfair. She would complain about its unfairness, and she's absolutely right. It's very justified to complain about that. And my, best kind of response was just, we have to eat what's appropriate for each of our health. And if you look at my plate, it's the same size as yours. And if you look at Daddy's plate, it's quite larger than mine. And that's what's healthy for each of us. And I agree, it's not fair, but that's what we have to eat. So I never kind of solved that question very well in terms of having a great answer to give her, other than I understand it's not fair, but this is what's healthy for you.
Having read the entire text of the memoir, Dara Lynn, and also then having read some of the backlash that came out after the article, it was interesting to me that any of the criticisms that people had were things that had gone through your own head. Like, these were not things that hadn't occurred to you. Like, is there a greater risk, for example, that B will feel bad about herself because she remains overweight, or that she will feel bad about herself because you were the primary driver of her effort to lose weight?
Yes, and I don't know if that affects anyone's perception of me or our story or my writing about it, but I absolutely, every criticism and every judgment that were legitimate, there were certainly some that were not, but those that were legitimate were all things I had struggled with myself, and that in writing about this, I was by no means saying, well, I've got this all figured out, let me teach you all how to do this. This is very much, I'm going to be really honest about all the self-doubt, all the mistakes, all the answers I don't have, but just to be really honest about the questions and the issues and the struggles. So I think that I did try to convey that I, far from thinking I have this all figured out, I struggle every day with my decisions and my methods, but ultimately, you know, as with many parenting decisions, we do the tough thing that we think is the right thing, even though it's hard and our children don't always want us to be doing it. That's how I go about this, saying, this is not easy, I'm not getting this right every time, but I'm trying. And that I think a lot of parents are afraid to try, and that at least I kind of put it out there that I'm doing my best.
The one thing you don't ever write about is caring what she looked like. On the other hand, there is, aside from the significant health questions, we live in a society that, for whatever reason, really disdains fatness and really values thinness. And there is, you know, especially as a young woman in this country, these are things that will affect how she feels about herself.
Yes, I think at the beginning of the book, I write about that as I was kind of confronting this reality of her obesity, that I was most concerned, obviously, about the health impact, but that I did see how she felt about herself, and that she was felt, you know, had negative feelings about being overweight, and that she did get sort of comments from her peers that were hurtful. And I think I had a decision to make at that point, which was either I could go, you know, devote myself to kind of saying, you're perfect this way, and we're going to fight against all the bad feelings and bad feedback that you might get as an overweight person, or we are going to focus on getting you healthy, and maybe some of those other issues will go away as you reach a healthy weight. And I really felt that as a parent, the responsibility to make my daughter healthy far outweighed the admirable but much less urgent goal of encouraging my daughter to feel good about herself and to ignore bullies and feel confident at any weight. I did feel that she was at an unhealthy weight. She didn't have to be thin, but she had to be healthy, and that was the key issue. But I did kind of consider the alternative, which is just saying, my effort is going to be making her feel comfortable at this weight. And I did make the choice that I felt she needed to be a healthy weight, and then the comfort might come along with that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak on the phone now with Ruth in Dallas. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. I have a question for your panel, or this person there. Between the ages of 6 and 7, the child gained a significant amount of weight and developed high blood pressure, and a nutritionist was mentioned there, but it was kind of glossed over. And I was wondering, with regards to the nutritionist, obviously the child has inherited this need, or this maybe addiction, I don't know how you would describe it, to food. And maybe, was there any counseling involved, rather than just say, you get to eat the smaller bagel, your brother gets to eat the bigger one? How is the child being worked with in terms of, and I know she's only 6 or 7, very young, how would an emotion, or where were the emotional needs of the child being addressed in that? Was the nutritionist helpful with that?
You know, we did go to weekly nutritionist appointments, and I write in the book about that relationship, which was fairly complicated. I didn't feel that it was really addressing her emotional needs as well as I had hoped. We really handled that as a family, that we had all these discussions about food and dieting, and, you know, in regards to health, but also in regards to how we feel about ourselves, and that is tricky for me as a parent to talk about, but it was important. I did, at times when I struggled with, am I saying the right thing, am I sending the right messages, I did sort of seek the help of a professional. I said, is this something that I should be coming in and talking to a professional about, because this is an emotional issue? And he said, you know, from what I was describing, she was very comfortable talking to my husband and me about these topics, and that was a perfectly, you know, legitimate way to support her emotionally, just not necessarily bringing in a professional, but just talking to her as her parents. And so that's how we did it.
Have you thought about the time that will come, or how old you'll want B to be, when you talk to her about the struggles you had particularly as a teenager, with sort of finding ways to healthfully control your own weight?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because there, in writing the book, I talked to her a lot about what I was including and wanted to make sure she was comfortable with it. And the one chapter I wouldn't let her read was the one about my own history. I just felt that she was too young to kind of know what I had struggled with.
For interrupting. You did some binging and purging and some really restrictive diets, essentially.
Yeah, I was, you know, as a teenager, I think I was, I didn't quite cross over into the realm of eating disorder, but it was definitely something that preoccupied me, and I was constantly dieting and felt unhappy with myself, and indeed did try diet pills and laxatives and anything, you know, I tried anything once. I have huge concern that my daughter would ever be in a situation like that. And I already started kind of talking to her, you know, if she ever expresses concern about her weight now, I say, you know, we know how to manage your eating in a really healthy way, and that's really important to remember, that you know how to take care of yourself, and we're here to help you do that. And there's a million ways, you know, if she ever says, oh, I'm not going to eat that, I don't want to get fat. I'm very quick to say, you know, we make choices and we balance our diet here. We don't deprive ourselves, and that I sort of am already on the lookout for behaviors that I think might indicate a problem with food. But I think I have to take a wait and see attitude. I think I'm very sensitive to it, having gone through it myself.
So, do you have in your mind like an age, like okay, 13, we'll sit down and just sort of have a more candid conversation about that part of it?
I don't know. I certainly haven't put a number in mind. It's mm-hmm. something that, you know, we're so open about this topic in our relationship that I feel confident that I'm, you know, sensitive to cues of that sort of behavior, and that I would be responsive to them, and that she, at this point, you know, certainly we have a dialogue that would allow me to raise those issues. So I think it's going to be more take a wait and see and just hope that... you know, it is a conversation that only needs to be theoretical.
Dara Lynn Weiss is my guest. She's a freelance writer and television print and internet content producer. We're talking this hour about her new memoir, The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. I'm speaking this hour with freelance writer Dara Lynn Weiss. Her new memoir is called The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. Next on the phones, we have Mike on the line in Garland. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Chris. I wanted to make a comment regarding what your author just said about the responsibility of looking at her child's health first. I think so many times adults, parents, myself being one, we get so caught up in the daily routines, and we're so busy and we forget how difficult parenting is, and being the heavy and making those choices for our children. And a lot of times we abdicate for convenience, either being disciplinarians or, in this case, making sure that the kids are eating healthy. So reflecting on the responsibility of parenting, you know, the kids have whatever we put in front of them to eat. Sometimes it's not convenient, but I think we have to reflect once again on being who's the adult and who's the parent and what our responsibility is. So I just wanted to celebrate the fact that accepting responsibility for parenting rather than the convenience of whatever the child wants.
Thanks for your call. Do you want to respond to that, Dara Lynn?
Well, thank you, Michael. I agree that is such a core theme of parenting, and that's part of what I thought was interesting about my story with B, is that it is a universal problem. You have something difficult that you have to do as a parent, and it is easy for other people to judge, and it is easy to not do things that are difficult as a parent. And that's part of doing it, though, is part of doing the job, is doing the tough thing, which I feel this certainly was.
Of course, she's still a little girl now, and you can exert a pretty significant amount of control over her diet. Are you in the back of your mind, and you write about this a little bit, how are you preparing yourself for the day when she's, say, 16, and whether or not you want to dictate what she'll eat, that the choice really becomes entirely her own?
That is something I approach as I do many other areas of parenting, is that you can't control what your children do when they're independent of you, and you can only give them the tools, the information, the support, the love that will hopefully lead them to make choices that you approve of. I felt in the early phases of helping Beef combat her obesity that we were very much controlling her diet, that we were giving her food to eat, we were cutting her off when she had enough, and that there wasn't a lot of independent decision-making on her part. But that in the intervening few years, this is something that she has taken on as she's now 9 and is required to make more decisions independently, and I'm incredibly gratified to see that she does manage this independently using the information we've given her, and that is what parenting is about, giving your child the tools to live their lives. But I can only hope that she will continue to do so when she's a teenager and really is further outside of my control.
Have those choices become easier for her over time?
Yes, and I think, they've just become habits, which is great because it doesn't seem so arduous. I think, when we first started, when she said, "What can I have for snack?" and I said, "A piece of fruit," and she was annoyed that it wasn't a cookie, that was a bit of a battle, whereas now she says, "What fruit do we have?" So she knows that's what she can choose from, and she's excited if there's mango and less excited if it's a banana, but, it's a different level of conflict. And I think also as she now is at a healthy weight, these conversations, insofar as they happen in public settings, are a lot less awkward because a parent, providing advice or setting limits for a child who is a healthy weight is a lot less controversial and awkward than a parent doing that with an obese child. So I find my job is easier because people are not kind of looking at me with as much scrutiny because my child is just like their children and not, this sort of special case that needs to be handled much more sensitively.
It is very interesting. Yeah, you don't look twice at a parent at a party who says, "No, you've already had 2 cookies. That's enough," to a child who's not overweight. But if the child is overweight, you worry somehow that the child is being judged too harshly by the parent.
Absolutely, and that's part of the essential conflict of this issue, is that somehow parents of overweight and obese children are disenfranchised from parenting around this issue because everyone's feels that, setting these limits is somehow abusive or any kind of curtailing of their portion sizes is deprivation. I think that was a lot of the response that my article got, that somehow limit setting became humiliation and portion control became starvation. I mean, it was just crazy that's how people saw these very reasonable parenting limits through the lens of childhood obesity.
We have an email here from Kelly who's curious about the fundamentals of Bee's diet plan. Was it based mostly on calories and energy balance, or did it focus on the kinds of food eaten and certain foods being encouraged or discouraged?
It was a combination. Ultimately, the kind of metaphor was traffic lights, and there were foods that were green lights and foods that were yellow lights and foods that were red lights. And you had to have a certain number of green lights per day, but you were allowed a certain number of red lights per week. And everything was permitted, which I really liked, and I think some people do not like, but that's, everyone brings to this their own judgment. I thought it was fine to allow processed foods in moderation. I thought it was fine to allow... celebrate that there was nothing that Bee couldn't partake in. We just had to account for it. It did require many servings of fruit and vegetables per day. I believe one at every meal. So that was, something that was sort of built into it, that there was going to be the building blocks of good nutrition. And then sort of around that, you could really kind of tailor it to your child's preferences and your family's lifestyle, which I did appreciate.
Back to the phones now. We have Maxine on the line in Dallas. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, how are you? This is very, very interesting. When I was a teenager, decades ago, my mother was very angry that I was overweight. I was 5'4", and I weighed 178.5 pounds. And so she, I would say, forced me to go to a commercial weight loss clinic-type plan where I would say the woman humiliated me and read over a diet log of the food I had eaten. It wasn't pleasant. I will say that, and all my friends went to the beach and ate nice sandwiches, and, well, I didn't look so good in that bathing suit. But anyway, I'm sorry, that's my dog. But after a while, I did lose weight. I did. And once that happened, honestly, it kind of bore the fruits of its own labor. And as I got thinner, just to give you an example, I was wearing a size 18 at the time, and that was the size that was the biggest in that size group. As I lost some weight and began to get thinner, I felt better about how I looked in clothes, and I like clothes, so that was a good thing. Over the years, I've managed to develop a program that works for me. I eat everything, but I don't eat a whole bagel. I eat a quarter of a bagel, and I don't eat a whole slice of cake. You know, just things that work for me, but I used to deny myself things, and that didn't really work for me very well.
Sounds like for Maxine, it was a happy ending, Darilyn. Is that the sort of thing that you were hoping ultimately for, Bea?
Absolutely. I mean, you certainly hear all kinds of stories. You hear stories that that start out like Maxine's and go really awry. And so it's great to know that it can have a happy ending, and that is certainly what I hope for Bea. And I do think that intervening so early, which was, you know, a controversial choice to do this when she was seven, kind of puts her on a track where she hopefully will not need to, you know, endure such a big lifestyle shift in her teens, that this will kind of be second nature to her.
I thought it was interesting to read that she would say to you, I'm still a fat person, I just look thinner now. And I wonder if her vision of herself and her own body has changed, having been working on controlling her weight for a couple of years now.
I think it's very much part of her identity, which is something I needed to learn from her, because I came to this like, okay, you know, she's so little, we're going to just fix this, we're going to make her a healthy weight, and she will be a healthy weight child, and forget that she was ever obese. And I think it's not that simple. I think this is something that she understands, that she does have to manage. Even if she is a healthy weight and eats healthy amount, it's not something that comes naturally to her. It is sort of an obese person masquerading as a healthy person in a strange way, and that having gone through this affected her. I think she her relationship to her body, to food, to her weight is different from other kids, and likely always will be. And that's you know, that's hard to take as a parent, but it's an issue she does need to deal with.
Back to the phones now. This time we have Jennifer on the line in Dallas. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. But first, I'm afraid I'm a part of a dying breed who does not carry a lot of candy in their home and who doesn't do a lot of chips and that sort of thing. I grew up military, and my mom, instead of giving us, you know, chips for snacks, that sort of thing, would say, nope, go get an apple. And if you're still hungry, well, you can wait for dinner. We weren't overweight. We were very fit, actually. And now I'm raising my 5-year-old son to be this way. And then he has maybe a select group of 3 friends who come over and are like, I'm sorry, you don't have Kool-Aid. You don't have this.
There's nothing to eat in this house, right?
There's nothing. And I have fruits, and we think bell peppers are fun to eat, all this sort of stuff. And I just feel like I'm a part of a dying breed. And how am I supposed to tell my child that, hey, it's okay if you have to have an apple instead of fruit snacks?
I totally relate, you know, in my own way to that that situation. And I think I was surprised to find that many parents go through that. We kind of think a lot of other parents are just kind of have a free-for-all and let their kids eat whatever they want. But I think there are a lot of parents who are managing their children's diet or not, and that is their choice. And that, you know, in the same way that different kids have different bedtimes or different kids are allowed to play with different video games, we make decisions as parents for our kids, and we need to stick up for them. And you can't, my attitude was, I can't expect my daughter to be happy that she doesn't always get to eat the same as other kids, but that's the rules of our house, and that's the rules of our family, and that I feel good about that choice, even if, you know, in the moment, it's bumming her out a little bit.
You do tell a great story about sending her off for the first time to sleepaway summer camp and sort of being prepared for the fact that there's not a lot of limits there. And you I think you would say went overboard trying to make sure that somebody would keep an eye on her. As it turned out, nobody did. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yes, it was just this past summer, actually. And it was a test that I was not at all ready to take, where she was going to be completely independent and for 3 weeks with me not around, making her own decisions in an incredibly challenging environment where there was, you know, just buffets of food at every meal. There was pizza and ice cream every night. There was a snack bar open all day. It was just a disaster. And I just, you know, thought if I went to that camp, I would gain weight every week. You know, it was just, I was hoping for the best, but expecting the worst, and it was very informative. First of all, that indeed I went crazy trying to like enlist counselors and directors in the kitchen to kind of help her, and that everyone sort of didn't kind of get on board, and that it was a reminder that, you know, each family kind of has to look out for themselves. And that when I came to get B at the end, 3 weeks later, she, A, had not gained any weight, which was incredible, because it was very challenging to maintain one's weight in that situation. But just that I saw her making the choices that I would have hoped that she would have made, and that she was really doing it, that she went to the gym just for fun, you know, that she went, you know, swimming and did all the active things that I would have wanted as a parent, and that when she went, you know, we went and had lunch in the cafeteria, and she picked the chicken and the broccoli and turned down three different starches and the sugary drinks and took water, and it was just, it was so gratifying and surprising, frankly, because she is, you know, she was 8 at the time, and that she had really learned how to manage this was far more gratifying than any, you know, number on the scale that she might have achieved. That as a parent, is what I had hoped, is that I could have a child who could manage this on her own. And so I know she can, and I only hope that she will continue to do so.
And was she excited about the book?
She was encouraging about it. I think she, you know, wasn't sure how it would depict her. And I think that's part of the stigma of obesity, that she sort of feels that in some way being an obese child is something that she would be looked down on for, whereas, of course, you know, anyone who reads the book will just come out thinking, wow, this child is incredible and intelligent and mature and amazing and has only, you know, much to be proud of. So I do think that, you know, we talked a lot about the book and she encouraged me to go ahead with it. And I really do hope that when she sort of reads it in later years, she will be extremely proud of herself and of what I did for her.
The new memoir by Dara Lynn Weiss is called The Heavy, A Mother, A Daughter, A Diet. Dara Lynn, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect was on the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is our senior producer. You can always send comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.